I'm talking about Don DeLillo videotape. And he was, for a bit of background, born November 20th, 1936. He was born in America, but his parents were Italian immigrants. Brought up mainly in the Bronx. So the community he lived in was mainly Italian-American. He was raised Catholic and is now married to a Barbara Bennett, who was a banker, now landscape architect. His influences, he doesn't really like to list other authors as influences, but his main influence that he likes to talk about is New York. Paintings in the Museum of Modern Art, and mainly European movies, jazz, and abstract expressionism. He's quite prolific. Don has written 15 novels, and additionally one co-written underneath a pseudonym. He has also written a play and a screenplay that has been performed called Game 6, and many, many, many uncollected short fictions and essays. He's famous, very famous. He has won a lot of awards, including the Jerusalem Prize. He was the first American to ever do so. And it's incredibly prestigious, as well as the Penn Faulkner Award. These are both from his book, The Underworld, which is where a videotape is taken from. And he won the William Dean Howells Medal for another book that he wrote called White Noise. That one was also for Underworld. And the National Book Award was for White Noise. Videotape itself is a short fiction inside of Underworld, and it is his exploration of postmodernity. Underworld, what happens is he follows this character, Nick Shea. He's an executive in waste management, including nuclear waste management. And Nick Shea has this trauma associated with the nuclear bomb and this post-Cold War mentality. And Don DeLillo himself is, in most of his books, is incredibly concerned with the themes of media saturation, so like the repetition of the Twin Towers falling. The JFK assassination is the source of one of his books, with sameness and apathy and just cultural isolation and like these people that become disenfranchised and kind of separate themselves from it. So videotape is the Texas highway killer shooting a random passenger in a car, and the Texas highway killer is completely fictional. He made it up. And it's told in the second person narrator. So I'm going to start with the first page, and I'm going to read out, it's the second page. The tape has the jostled sort of non-eventness that marks the family product. Of course, the man in this case is not a member of the family, but a stranger in a car. A random figure, someone who happened along in the slow lane. It shows a man in his 40s wearing a pale shirt open at the throat, the image washed by reflections and sun glint with many jostled moments. It is not just another video homicide. It is a homicide recorded by a child who thought she was doing something simple, and maybe halfway clever, shooting some tape of a man in a car. He sees the girl and waves briefly, wagging a hand without taking it off the wheel, an underplayed reaction that makes you like him. It's the unrelenting footage that rolls on and on. It has an aimless determination, a persistence that lives outside the subject matter. You are looking into the mind of a home video. It is innocent, it is aimless, it is determined, it is real. And to look closer at the story, just like the tape, where it's just watching this one guy in this one car on and on until something happens. statement of fact, each of these sentences which he makes into separate paragraphs are the it, he, it, he. So it's looking closer. He's drawing the reader in by saying, of course, it's not just another. By relating the video closer, it's as if you can almost watch it yourself, but at the same time, it's him telling the story. You're not actually watching it, you're reading it. And through this conversational tone, he also, everything in this section, in this little snippet, is complete repetition. And that kind of goes along with the larger story that he's talking about. And also, it is not just another video homicide is his first introduction of why you're reading this story. It's an introduction to the actual future event and why you want to keep watching the story over and over and over again. When he first saw the video footage on the news about Lee Harvey Oswald shooting JFK, he watched it for several hours on end, just same thing with the Twin Towers, watching it over and over and over, and the media saturation of that. And then the same thing, it's the unrelenting footage that rolls on and on. It is an aimless determination, a persistence that lives outside the subject matter. He doesn't just say it rolls on and then continue with why that's important. He just repeats the same thing in different ways, impressing upon the reader why this is such a traumatic event. He also, in this section, he separates us as the reader by using he after he had just said you until it becomes complete. It spirals in towards itself with down just below where I just read, he is bald up the middle of his head, a nice guy in his 40s whose whole life seems to be open to the handheld camera. He compresses it until he's statements of fact, very short, repeating his, guy, his. And then from that he switches back to the reader, to you. And after having three quarters of a page of it and him, it's back to you. And then from that single, you keep on looking, not because you know something is going to happen. Of course you do know something is going to happen, and you do look for a reason, but you might also keep on looking if you came across this footage. It becomes you. Why are you looking at this footage? Why are you reading this? And continue to read it. It's completely circular. He repeats something is going to happen. He repeats you 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times in this small paragraph. He repeats the look and looking. It's the repetition, and because of the circularity and because it's you after he, it brings you back in and it rolls you forward. It's kind of like that scroll piece where it just tumbles on and you keep reading because it's drawing you in. And so the second area I wanted to look at was on page 93. He is where, of course, we focus in on where the action actually happens. Because after he draws you in, but you're waiting for something to happen, you're like, just like he said, what you want to do is find something more real, truer to life. So you keep watching. He is hit soon after. You've seen the tape many times. You know from the hand wave exactly when he will be hit. It's something naturally that you wait for. You say to your wife, if you're home and she is there. Now here is where he gets it. You say, Janet, hurry up. This is where it happens. Now here is where he gets it. You see him jolted, sort of wire-shocked. Then he seizes up and falls toward the door, or maybe leans or slides into the door, is the proper way to put it. It is awful and unremarkable at the same time. The car stays in the slow lane. It approaches briefly, then falls back. I actually highlighted more than just that, but looking at this small section, it's continuing the movement of action. And he's repeating the same things It is awful and unremarkable at the same time. It's kind of like what we did last night, and the car stays in the slow lane, brings you back to the beginning, because on the first page he says that exact same sentence, where he physically had stepped on the accelerator, moved forward, and then moved back. And now, dead, he does the exact same thing before crashing into a guardrail. There's lots to say. I'm not going to say it.